We get things underway this hour by welcoming to the show a talented writer of a number of novels, including The Voting Booth, Finding Yvonne, and The Only Black Girls in Town. Her brand new book is Blackbirds in the Sky, the Story and Legacy of the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre. Our Carrie Haskell had a chance to talk with author Brandi Colbert.
Brandi, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, gosh, thank you so much for having me.
The book tells the story of the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre, which more people are aware of now than were even 5 years ago. In the foreword, you talk about how the fact that the horrific events of that day, that weekend, along with so much of the less than ideal history of America, was never mentioned in history classes. It was never mentioned in mine either. And how that was a major motivator for you to write this book.
Yeah, it definitely was. You know, I was one of those people who grew up thinking that I did not like history. It just seemed like a bunch of dates and names that I was supposed to memorize. And there was really no context behind any of it. So we would learn about a war. You never really found out why the war was started. It just felt like it sort of happened. And so when I actually started researching history on my own as an adult, I realized, actually, this is pretty interesting, and so much of it is about the way it is told. And so, you know, I really wanted to kind of flip that on its head and write a book that was, you know, certainly a history book, but that was interesting and maybe felt like it was someone just telling you a really long, involved story.
Mm. Now, you give, the book isn't just about the events of Greenwood. You give a lot of insight into the conditions in America, both pre and post Civil War, that sort of set the stage for this attack on the Greenwood neighborhood. Why was it important for you to do that in this book?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely wanted to make sure that, you know, I wrote about the massacre in as much detail as I could. But to me, what was really interesting was reading about, you know, the conditions of Tulsa and just the conditions of the United States and, you know, even Oklahoma around that time. And, you know, all of the things that actually led up to the massacre. And to me, it made so much more sense once I analyzed, you know, the state of the media at the time and the state of Tulsa and, you know, the state of Black Americans and all of those things, you know, post-war America really all fed into the massacre and, you know, just those events happening in the first place.
Now, a big part of that was the so-called race riots, which increased significantly in the years directly after, you point out, the end of World War One, and including one that you talk about in some detail in 1920 in Elaine, Arkansas, that was especially deadly.
Yes, that one is, you know, Elaine, Arkansas. My parents are from from towns not too far from there, Phillips County, Arkansas. And, you know, the 100th anniversary of that was just recently. And my own mother, who grew up so close to there, hadn't even heard of it until, you know, the 100th anniversary. And that was really surprising and shocking. But yes, it was a group of Black sharecroppers who wanted to unionize. And instead of letting them, you know, a lot of the white farmers around there felt threatened. And then ended up killing, you know, hundreds of people. They aren't even sure how many.
Yeah, and I did want to talk a little bit with you, too, about that term race riots, which isn't really indicative of what many of these events were. It often was just that term was an excuse to hide the fact that it was just an outright attack on Black people and their neighborhoods and their homes.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So, you know, it was called a race riot most times that something like this occurred. But then when you look at the facts and look at the events, it was actually, you know, white mobs typically attacking Black people and, you know, primarily Black neighborhoods. And then also if they were classified as riots instead of the attacks that they were, then the people and everyone involved was denied the right to file a claim with their insurance company. So they weren't allowed to recoup any of their losses when, you know, quite often their homes were burned down and their entire neighborhoods were destroyed.
Now, one of the points that you make early on in the book is that the main motivators behind this spike in white mobs attacking Black Americans in their neighborhoods under that guise of race riots was fear, especially of change that challenged that the white American sense of white supremacy.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it seems like any time Black Americans sort of gained any wealth or, you know, went off to sort of start their own neighborhoods like the Greenwood District because they had been shut out of white neighborhoods, then that was seen as a threat. So it really kind of felt like there was no winning, you know, even if you were being segregated away, forced out of another community and tried to make your own, then that was still seen as something that wasn't acceptable.
We're talking with Brandi Colbert on Downtown. She is the author of Blackbirds in the Sky, The Story and Legacy of the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre, available now wherever you can find, wherever you get your books. And you just sort of alluded to the next point I wanted to talk about. Greenwood was not an accidental success. The purchase of the 40 acres of land that became the neighborhood of Greenwood was by O.W. Gurley and his wife Emma. And they developed a plan for that community of Black-owned homes and business alongside J.B. Stratford. They all seem to have a shared vision for what could be and the ability and drive to make that vision happen. Can you talk about their backgrounds a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, I thought it was really interesting. And that was one of the most fun chapters for me to write because it was really just about, you know, the joy of the building up the Greenwood District. But you know, both of the co-founders that you mentioned, they were the children of formerly enslaved people. And then, you know, that to me sort of set the stage. A lot of the Black Americans who came to help build up Greenwood were from the South. They saw Tulsa as the promised land, especially, you know, a lot of them were formerly enslaved or also descendants of enslaved people. And so, you know, they all came from sort of these diverse backgrounds, and they all just wanted to build this place where they felt safe and where they felt like this, you know, Tulsa was a booming oil town, and they really wanted to help it grow. So they built up, you know, boarding houses, businesses of all kinds, and just really built this thriving community.
Along with the fear motivator, do you think the violence specifically in Tulsa, in Greenwood, was motivated by that jealousy that while the neighborhood had been established under that specter of the separate but equal, Greenwood became a little too equal and in many ways surpassed the white areas of Tulsa?
Yeah, sure. I think that was definitely seen as a threat. And then, you know, the jealousy over everything that the Black Tulsans were able to acquire without the help of, you know, white people. So plenty of Black people there still worked as domestic workers in the homes of white people. But, you know, then they were seeing the Black Tulsans in the Greenwood District who did not have to do that and who were building their own wealth. And one thing I found really fascinating was that, you know, a dollar in the Greenwood District would pass hands in the Black community about 30 times before it would even leave. And so they really had established a self-sufficient community that did not need any help or support from white people. And that was certainly seen as a threat and then, you know, also a form of jealousy as well.
The events of those days were just so awful, and the firsthand account survivors in the book are something that everybody should read. I want to ask, though, a little bit about the extensive efforts that were made to just make this go away in the historical record. One of the points you have in the book is that there was a firsthand survivor account by Mary Elizabeth Jones Parrish, published in 1922. But it would be another 53 years before the next book about this event was published.
Right. There was a real, you know, concerted effort to suppress any information about the Tulsa Race Massacre. So, you know, I think because a lot of white people were perhaps ashamed that it happened, public officials, both Oklahoman and Tulsan, did not want that to reflect poorly on Oklahoma. It was still a fairly new state. It had only been a state for 14 years at that point, which is really kind of interesting to think about, you know, now so far into the future. But, you know, and I think also Black people weren't necessarily wanting to talk about it because they might have been afraid that it would happen again. And it was just a really, you know, harrowing thing to think about and to have experienced and lived through. So, yes, people were threatened who tried to write articles about it and who, you know, tried to talk about it publicly. And so there is a good chunk of, right, about 50 years there where just all information was lost or completely suppressed.
You make the point that in, as you just said, addressing these events are difficult both for the descendants of the victims and of the perpetrators, the shame, that shame in trying to hide it. But you make the point that the discussion is one that is absolutely vital in order to move this country forward so we don't keep repeating these events.
Certainly.
It sort of related to that, can you talk about a little bit about the role that the local newspapers, especially the Tulsa Tribune, played in inflaming the mob at that time?
Yeah, so, you know, there was quite a bit of sensationalistic reporting back then, and there were a couple of competing daily newspapers, the white newspapers in Tulsa, because the black Tulsans had their own newspaper. And the Tulsa Tribune reported a really inflammatory front page headline that essentially, you know, said, "To nab Negro tonight," and that was, you know, inciting white Tulsans to basically go and, you know, seek vigilante justice by trying to lynch Dick Rowland, the black man accused of assaulting Sarah Page. And so it was really irresponsible reporting. And, you know, even though the Tulsa Tribune certainly, I think, did more than any other newspaper to sort of advance this white mob mentality, you know, the Tulsa World also had its fair share of, you know, bad, offensive headlines around that time. So the media really did play a role in inciting some of the violence and, you know, allowing it to happen.
Brandy, I have so many other things I would love to talk to you about this book. Thank you for taking the time today to talk with us about your wonderful book.
Oh, thank you so much for your great questions, for having me on.